Welcome, 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 welcome to Saturday, weekend payday. You know, the streets are going crazy.
The streets are going crazy?
Yeah.
In the middle of winter?
There's so many people out there. I mean, I've never seen so many people out in Wellington.
Oh, like in the middle of winter?
Yeah.
Just today, because it's sunny.
Yeah, it's sunny and some got paid yesterday, so.
Some got paid.
Yeah. You know, there's a song one of my former colleagues used to play. It's called 25 is a Payday. A nice jazzy tune.
Oh, this is for these people that get paid monthly.
Yeah, No. So, you know,
Couldn't handle that tendency.
Why?
I mean, it was okay when I was in Australia and mining, like, yeah, but not here. You'd be starving for half a month on the wages they pay you.
I find it quite awkward that most people get paid like weekly. I'm just like, huh?
Yeah.
Why are you giving me this money every week?
Because it's so little.
Ah, man. Well, you've got an argument there. So I prefer the monthly one, because when you give me monthly money, then I know, okay, cool. I know I have more month after my money. So I know I'm broke.
Right.
Yeah. So if you give me weekly, I'm like, yeah, nah, listen, next week. I'll use it more responsibly next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So you think that you'd end up spending more money?
If I got it weekly.
Really?
Yeah. You'd rather just give me monthly and know that, okay, cool. My transport to work is X amount. My food is X amount. My rental is X amount. But let me just take away from the food and then put it towards drinking.
Yeah. Because you get this big chunk and it's like you want to enjoy yourself, you know. And like, you can do that on mining money, but you can't do it on Kiwi money.
there's a meme that always goes around in South Africa where they say, on the 25th, someone will post it and say, "Qala ngerent," which means start with your rental.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first thing, this other guy posted the other time and he said, listen, yo, I wish I listened to my heart when my heart said, "Qala ngerent." So most people want to have fun first. And worse if the 25th comes on a Friday. Just like yesterday.
Yeah.
Ooh. The streets were abuzz.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, in South Africa or here?
No, here as well. But I know in South Africa, it's obvious. Like, it's just like saying the sky is blue. It is blue. Like,
yeah, it's going to be a buzz all the time.
It is. It's a buzz. It's a weekend. Come on, man. Most of my friends, I mean, some of them were sending me messages. Hey, I love you, man. You're drunk. You're drinking. Mm-hmm. You just got paid. Yeah, so I could tell. Yeah, it's one of those obvious things.
I haven't been going out much because it's so cold. I turn into a big bear in the wintertime. I just go into my cave and stay there.
I prefer it that way as well.
Yeah.
But
come out in the summer.
Yeah, summer. I actually prefer to be indoors, but grooving indoors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love indoor groove where if you take me to a small pub,
yeah,
a small little club, you know, like, you know, where it's warm, where I can sit down, because, you know, we're tired of standing at this age now. So, yeah.
How old are you?
Mature enough to be looking for comfortable shoes instead of stylish shoes.
Well, talking about things to go out to, you got Burna Boy's tickets are finally out.
Oh, yeah?
First release already sold out. And they literally just put it, I think that must have been within hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
It shows you that people actually do have, you know,
they've got money.
Some money stashed out.
They're saving
somewhere.
It up because all the cold weather. They're staying in. They've saved up a lot. But and also, so they're on sale. And I think the tickets, I'm just having a look at it now. But the tickets there are $179, which I think is, like, I've seen some tickets for other things, and that's actually, by today's standard, actually not bad.
It's not bad, yeah. It's not bad. Because I was looking at the, I actually went to the game last week, the Wrexham versus Wellington Phoenix.
Okay.
And the tickets were going up to $600.
What?
Yes.
What?
For 90 minutes.
No.
$600.
You have to be a real super fan.
Look, I think also it comes with the comforts of being in probably VIP. Yeah, and I'm not sure what happens in VIP this side when it comes to soccer. But I've been to a game where I was invited as a very important person.
Right.
I think it was the Telkom Knockout Cup or something. It was against Kaizer Chiefs, one of the big teams in South Africa.
Yeah.
So they were playing against Maritzburg. And, you know, you get into VIP, you've got all this ever all-flowing alcohol, you know, the meals, all the shabam, you know. Comfort in the suites, you're wearing suits in there. Yeah, so I kind of understand what VIP is about, but I'm not sure what it is, the site.
Oh, yeah. Just turned that on by mistake. Sorry.
Yeah, the gremlins are always, you know, in our computers. But yeah, it's probably the VIP experience. But $600, I'm not too sure.
No, I couldn't do that.
To go watch 90 minutes? 90 minutes of a game.
Well, look, I go to game. I've been to a few soccer games. I kind of understand it, but don't really understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So soccer is something I go to with other people.
Yeah.
And they get enthusiastic, and I just get into the buzz because they're enthusiastic.
Just think of it this way. If the blue team is playing against the red team,
right,
the blue team is trying to score in the net of the red team and vice versa.
Yeah.
So when your team scores in that net, if you're supporting the red team, then you celebrate. And if someone from the blue team kicks your player, you get angry.
Right.
And then, you know, let out some few slurs here and there, you know. swear a little bit, get passionate.
I kind of go, I was with a lot of the Bafana, was it Banyana?
Banyana
people.
Mm-hmm.
Supporting some soccer game we were watching. I don't even remember who was playing because it might have been Banyana. It was probably Banyana, but, you know, like I sort of get kind of into the vibe more than anything else. So used to in Perth, people would go to the casino at like, and they go and watch a game at like 2 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
which is crazy.
Look at the time zone.
Yeah.
The time zone this side is not really friendly to the rest of the world. That's why. That's why every time when you have to get on a call, a group call with friends, you always have to find the best time for them, not us, because we are just like, you know, middle of nowhere. But yeah, most of the time I think we become super fans. Soccer is like a religion, really. Yeah, it is a religion. If you look at my wardrobe right now, one of the things that you'll notice is that there's more soccer jerseys coming in than actual clothes. So when I have to go for important functions, it's like, I actually don't have a shirt.
So do you collect different teams' shirts?
No. Different teams being two teams, which is, well, Manchester United and Mamelodi Sundowns, because I'm a super fan of both teams.
Right.
And obviously Real Madrid as well. So, you know, I've got those teams that I support. So that's what's in my closet.
Yeah, I collect T-shirts too, but a lot of my T-shirts are kind of like activist T-shirts. I've got Black Panthers.
Oh, yeah.
I've got, like, the Polynesian Panthers.
Uh-huh.
I've got Indigenous Aboriginal flag.
Yeah.
Justice. We want justice now. Like, I have T-shirts like that.
You're a super fan in that
area,
I mean, to each their own. Some people are just super fans of suits and... I don't know. Super fans of corporate or something. I don't know. It is what it is, man.
I'm listening to you, but I'm actually just looking for Nduna's. Nduna's going to be playing at Moon soon. I'm just looking for the date. Yeah, he's supposed to. I'm just looking for the date on his page, but I can't see. Oh, Moon Bar, Saturday the 2nd of August. So it's not this weekend.
The
following.
No.
No, yeah, it is.
Oh,
it's August,
The coming weekend,
Coming weekend, So he's going to be at Moon Bar. It's an EP release.
What's the EP called?
The EP, Go High.
Go High.
Yeah, so it's 9 p.m. I got tickets already.
Go High.
So, you know, get out there and see Nduna at Moon Bar in Newtown. Good little funky little bar there.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's really good. And... yeah, it's really good to support our local artists, right?
Yeah, and you know, one thing that when we're talking about local artists, I know it's preempting, but local is lekker. Lekker.
Means okay, tell me what lekker means, because somebody said to me once it's like butter.
It's great.
It's great.
Literally, that's the loose translation of it. Local is great.
Right.
Yeah, so literally it's touting... buying local or consuming local.
Right, okay.
And talking about consuming local, next year. I'll just leave it at that and just say next year.
Next year.
Yeah, so
we're going to be doing something.
Keep listening to the Black House and you'll be hearing what we'll be talking about when I say next year. Mark my words, 10 past 3.
Moving in silence.
20 past 3 at 26 July next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we've been talking a lot about, you know, the whalers and, you know, black history in New Zealand.
Yeah.
I think let's get into that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, well, where we left off, there's a couple of things I wanted to correct, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But before we start, you know, because we're actually talking today as descendants and community members to reflect on those who walked on this land long before us, right? And those are African diaspora mariners, laborers, miners, mayors, students, and the names that were left out of the story, which I think the more I dig and dig and dig, and the more I find and find and find, mm-hmm. the more I'm like, wow, this is a really interesting story. And it gets interesting and more interesting the more you dig around.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is about a period of time post 1500s, right? So this is not, this is about, we do acknowledge the mana whenua of Te Whanganui a Tara, Taranaki whānui ki te upoko o te ika and Ngāti Toa Rangatira, and their ongoing role as kaitiaki guardians of this place. But we're here to talk about black presence in New Zealand long before the 90s, mm-hmm. right? Long before the 1990s. What was that? So we covered briefly Captain Cook, Thomas Furneaux, and that horrible massacre on Queen Charlotte's Sound.
Mm-hmm.
So they went ashore on Grass Cove at Queen Charlotte's Sound, and one of the men there was a man called James Tobias Swilly. So in the New Zealand records, we don't see his name. You have to actually go offshore to find his name. You have to go to records and collections that are held outside of the country, which I find really interesting because I am familiar with a similar story to this, but the man never had a name.
Mm.
And finding his name was a big what? Because I didn't think that there would be a record of him anywhere else, but there was.
It goes with the statement where people usually say the internet never forgets, right? So, like, we think that it only applies to modern day living, where when you record a video or you get up to no good, we kind of say, okay, cool, we're watching you, we're saving your videos. And then one day you come out, you say, listen, I don't believe in 1, 2, 3. And then, boom, someone posts that video that you were saying you believe in a certain thing that you now say you don't believe in.
Yeah.
And they say that, okay, the internet never forgets. And I also think that we can apply the same thing to that comes to books as well.
Yeah.
Once
it's written down.
It can never be forgotten.
And the really interesting thing I'm finding is that that in New Zealand they've stopped digitizing archives, but in other places around the world...
Mm-hmm. No, don't worry.
Other places around the world... there's a lot of digitized archival material.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was really interested in accessing as much as I could from where I am in New Zealand, short of not being able to do what Santilla Shangaipi's done, right?
What I think is there's a selective digitization when it comes to this this type of material. And I think it applies to every country, continent, state, or whatever or territory, let me say. Because if I was to give you everything as you would want it, what does that mean for me who is up there ruling you? Like, if your parents were to tell you the whole truth about everything when you're growing up, like... For instance, if you were allowed, it sounds sick and everything. If you're allowed to drink beer and, you know, indulge in what adults do, no under 18 stuff, when you were like 5, 6, what would that do to you?
You would be in control of yourself.
Exactly.
And like, you'd be autonomous, maybe.
Exactly.
Well, if you call that being autonomous, I think that's kind of like, you're giving yourself an addiction.
Exactly. So,
even though you think you're free.
I mean, in that sense, I mean, that might be a terrible example, but it does speak to the sort of parental guidance.
Yeah,
when it comes to leadership.
The paternalism of... the paternalistic aspects of our history, because it wasn't like I I wasn't aware of a story about a black man that had been killed in New Zealand in the early points of contact.
Yeah.
But to see the story laid out as it was, mm-hmm. and to see that this man actually has a name, that really, that was like, wow, okay, this is more than just, this stuff has been written down, you know what I mean? There's a record. And, you know, there's a few things I wanted to add to that. He was actually killed at Grass, it's called Grass Cove in Queens Charlotte Sound, and it was 10 men in all that got massacred by a group of Māori people there. And this was all because Cook and Tobias Furnow were supposed to meet in Queen Charlotte Sound, and apparently Cook left mm-hmm. before Tobias Furnow got there.
Okay.
So they were supposed to meet up. They'd set off. He was on the Endeavour and the other one was on the Adventurer, and then they got split up in a storm. And
don't just go Tobias through those names and say the Endeavour, Adventurer.
Oh, those are the ships.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I need you to mention that those are the ships.
Those are the ships, yeah.
Because, you know, when someone says Adventurer, like, yeah. what?
And there's even, you know, even on the second, was it the second one? I'm not sure. But, like, I want to move on from that first next thing because, you know, Captain Cook made three voyages to New Zealand and he wasn't a part of the First Fleet. I thought he was, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
He had actually visited Australia before.
Mm-hmm.
And then the First Fleet came in. There were 11 ships in all. Yeah. And on that First Fleet, there were 15 black men. I think there was some kids, some black children as well.
Okay.
But they're from all over.
Probably boys, right?
No, girls.
Girls as well.
Yeah, because this is the transport system.
Oh, yeah.
And the transportation, getting transported was, if you think about it, that time, and then I'm like, okay, and this is going to the book now of Santila Shangaipi's book called Black Convicts, right? What she does in that book is she goes back before the First Fleet arrived in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, what was England, Britain, doing in the wider world?
Yeah.
During that time, and that was the transatlantic slave trade, that whole time, you know. And so Britain's empire was massive, and if they colonized the country, and they would use indigenous people and stuff for labor because it's about sugar, tobacco,
mm-hmm.
other crops that were being exported around, but sugar was the biggest one, right? So basically in Scintilla's book, she goes back and she looks at what Britain was doing. And as Britain was moving out and colonizing and taking over and invading and saying they discovered things that were already discovered, right? Then their laws applied.
Yeah.
They would impose their laws.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things they did was they would transport people that maybe resisted, rebelled, broke the law, stole or anything. They would transport them to penal colonies.
Yeah.
So one of these penal, well, there's a few penal colonies before Australia became a penal colony.
I thought it was the first, actually.
No, there was Barbados.
Oh, wow.
So it was actually being called, being transported to Barbados. So you're being Barbados'd.
Oh.
Literally, that's what it was called.
Okay.
So those could be settlers, British settlers, Irish settlers, Scottish settlers that had gone out to these new British colonies, gotten into trouble, and then they get Barbados'd. And it would also include any indigenous people. It would include any slaves.
Yeah.
Because Britain was slaving at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Britain was the biggest slaver.
But it became unsustainable at some point, right?
No. It didn't become unsustainable. From what I'm reading, it became a moral issue. And it became like a fight because you had the first revolution in America, right? Which was the one of independence from Britain.
Yeah.
And what they did with slaves that fought for the British, they got them out of America and sent them to Nova Scotia.
Mm.
So they were the first black Canadians, right? But these people were like one in three had been born in Africa. But we think of slaves from this side of the world.
Yeah.
That everybody had been born in America, and that this, it wasn't as big as it was. It was a massive industry, because even a lot of slave ships, when they were put out of business by the British, they moved south, started blackbirding down here.
Okay.
But I've jumped a couple of things here. You've moved me. You've moved me ahead.
So
the Barbados thing, and then another penal colony before Australia was Bermuda, and I think Guinea was in there as well. That was a potential one. But when you look at where a lot of these slaves, that when they finally decided that Australia is going to be a penal colony, a big, massive open air penal colony, the places where people were coming from, and you know their origins, like places like Barbados, Bermuda, Cape Colony, Guadalupe, Mauritius, Demerara, Nevis, St. Vincent, Mozambique, let me go down, Antigua, some just had Africa, no NFT, no further information.
No further information,
Dominica, Jamaica. I mean, these were people that were living or being slaved to. So it's like, when you think about it, you start thinking of slavery as not just a one trip. You start here, you end there. Because at that time, when you've got the Britain and the Americans and they're about to have their war of independence from Britain, you were having people moved around. And it really depended on where they were and what was happening at that time. You know, so you could be moved from Africa, say, to Virginia in America.
Yeah.
You could get into trouble there. Or get whatever happened, and then you're moved to another place. So it's not like off America. You could be transported to different places. And also, when slavery, in the antebellum period between the Revolution and the Civil War, there was a lot of different rules coming up for slaves in America, and then you had like, for black people that had been maybe slaved to a British colony, post when they said slave, they didn't really get rid of slavery.
No, they didn't.
They just changed. They changed it. You had a ticketing system.
Oh yeah.
You were you would be. There was a amelioration period. There was the apprenticeship period, where it was like, oh, you go from being owned to being in this apprenticeship stage.
You're basically what they're using these days when you just finish your university studies.
Yes.
Yeah.
No different.
Yeah.
You know, and all during all of this, Australia is being colonized.
Yeah.
New Zealand is being invaded and colonized. Not in the same way as Australia, because in New Zealand, it kind of started with the sealers and the whalers, which were really rowdy and over the top. But we can get to that after a music break. What do you reckon?
You want a music break?
Yeah, have a music break.
I'm getting so into, like, you know, when you have a little kid at your feet by the fire, and you've been told stories.
Yeah.
And you know, you're just enjoying, you're just into it, and you're starting to imagine it.
Yeah.
Damn, that's where I was right now.
I highly recommend, and even though Scintilla has exclusively focused on Australia, you have to remember that Australia, New Zealand was a part of New South Wales for a period, which was the penal penal harbour.
Oh,
so
you had
Van Diemen's Land, which is Tasmania, and you had New South Wales. So that's the Sydney area. And the other place that they could take you was Port Phillip District, you know, if you didn't die at sea, right? So we were, New Zealand was a part of New South Wales, and I can bring up the dates for that after the music.
All right, let's get into this one by Didi Luzipo, and it's called Freedom, one of my favorite tracks.
Very appropriate.
I'm not too sure if she's got something new out, but I hope she's got something new out.
Very appropriate.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's all about freedom, man.
Mm-hmm. Diti Luzipo with this track called Freedom right here on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. The Black House is what you're listening to.
Yeah, I've been a busy person.
Yeah, you have.
I've been a researching mad woman. I don't even know what else to say. It's just fascinating.
You know, one thing I always wonder, I always look at the devices we use.
Mm.
For example, the phone, the laptops, the computers that we use.
Mm.
I always imagine being on the other side. What do I mean by the other side? Being the screen.
Being the screen? Being the AI?
Like looking at you, the reactions to different information when you get that information.
Just from the note, like, I'm reading, well, I'm audio-booking it, but this book by Santilla Shangaipi called Black Convicts, right? Mm-hmm. And while researching for this, to have this discussion about where there has been a black presence in New Zealand,
yeah,
I was listening to just her notes at the very beginning of the book. I was literally screaming on the motorway. She was talking about stuff that we've touched on but not really dug into. And, you know, she's traveled to different colonial archives to have a look and find these names. She's done all this work. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating. There were, you know, on the first fleet into Australia in 1788, which, you know, like what I wanted to clarify from last week is that last time we were on here, was 11 ships.
Mm.
But there were 15 people of African heritage on that, on those fleet, the fleet. And, you know, when, you know, for me as a person of African heritage, when I see black people in New Zealand history, it piques my interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what do you mean? I thought I was the only one. Like, what the heck? You know, and then the places that these people came from. You know, in order, when they're being transported, when Australia became a penal colony. So, you know, I'm just going to move ahead more. I don't want to focus, you know, I definitely recommend reading the book Black Convicts. It's an eye-opener. It's amazing. She's rewriting Australian history, and it's brilliant. But I also don't want to focus too heavily on Australia. I want to see what, like, okay, so how did that come to New Zealand? How did that affect New Zealand?
Yeah.
And so it's been noted that, you know, in the sealing days, you know, in the late or mid-1700s, you know, sealers were coming down here. And a lot of those sealers mm-hmm. were coming on multicultural crews to get off Australia, off the penal colony. It was, even in America, it was safer for black men to go to sea and do whaling than to stay on shore during that antebellum period, because you could be re-enslaved.
Mm.
You could be killed really easily, you know. So after the revolution, they evacuated anybody who supported the British to Nova Scotia, you know. And so it's like going to sea was freedom, but dangerous, like really dangerous.
You know, when you say going to sea was freedom, I think of it in the context of now, in the context of back then.
Mm.
Two totally different things.
Yeah, totally different.
Totally, totally different. Because when you look at a body of water and you look at going out to sea, it's like, oh, calming, relaxing.
Yeah.
A bit more like this.
On the yacht with a glass of wine. No, it wasn't like that. It was blood and guts and oil and dirt and, you know, fighting huge beasts. No, it wasn't like that. But, you know, if you were a convict and you were transported to Australia, you were ticketed, so you were still belonging to somebody. So you weren't.
So literally, you were some sort of. You were a commodity, basically.
You're still a commodity. You're still, you know, the sugar, the whole thing with the sugar plantations and in Queensland and supplying the intensive labour. So if you think about the enslavement or the convicting of black bodies was about produce and labour, right?
Yeah.
Producing sugar that fed England. Literally, both orally and financially, and the bodies that needed to do that work. So you've got these convicts getting trapped and then jumping onto whaling ships, but the sealers were the ones that came first. Yeah. Got any questions?
No.
Come on, give me some questions. I've been studying this. Okay, so, okay, let's talk about a little bit about the Sealers.
Yeah.
So, you know, Māori have been in New Zealand since before 1300 CE. So it's about 800 plus years, right?
Yeah.
So seal meat was really delicious. Their fur made warm clothing and their teeth was used for fish hooks. So many were killed that most colonies disappeared. So it was a food source, right? And in the 1700s, there were still thousands of seals in the waters around Southland and the West Coast. So early European explorers arriving in sailing ships caught seals for food, fur, and oil. You know, seal fur hats and all these, you know, amazing things you can do with seal fur. And apparently it tasted really good. Like, I don't know. I sort of look at these seals and they're so cute, but I would eat one if I was stuck on a deserted island. I would definitely get me one and eat it.
I mean, if we can even eat each other when it comes to, if we can turn to cannibalism in the most desperate of times.
Yeah.
What's
Andes team, that soccer team.
Yeah.
Do you know that story?
I've heard about it.
There's a movie about it. Yeah. They crashed in the soccer team. Mm. They crashed in the Andes, and as people died off, they ate them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like there's something about seals that are really cute, and so you don't want to feel like they always remind me of dogs, like puppies.
Yes.
There's something puppyish about them. I don't know about those elephant seals, though. They're just ugly.
No, those ones want to eat you.
Yeah, they want to eat you. I was looking at a really funny video of an elephant seal that came into the car park in Gisborne and tried to smash up a car.
Yeah. I saw that. When was that? Was it last week?
Was it just recently? I thought it was a while ago. But
I think I saw the video last week. Mm. Yeah, I was just like, oh. I don't know what I would do in that situation.
So, like, soon after the establishment of the English convict colony in Sydney, mm-hmm. New Zealand's first sealers landed in Dusky Sounds around 1792. So I'm looking at these dates and I'm thinking, they've just had American Revolution. They're about to have the Civil War, you know, over, that's what they call the war for slavery, but people have had different arguments about that. And alerted, you know, and Captain Cook had alerted a lot of people that there were seals down here. So it was a multi-ethnic industry, and convicts that were mariners maybe before they got transported.
Mm-hmm.
And or they had other skill sets or just wanted to get the hell out of Australia, jump on these boats and come down. And I've read other things where it said that New Zealand was very multicultural around this period.
Multicultural?
Multicultural in the sense that all these sealers were coming through and they're from all over the world, right? Yeah. Because the seal product wasn't just valuable to Māori and British. You had Americans, you had French, you had all these other countries that were trying to get to this resource.
Mm. And when you talk about it being multicultural, and the erasure.
The erasure of the multiculturalism.
Yeah. More specifically the black.
Yeah.
Side of things.
Yeah, the black side of it. Like, I would like to really invite anybody from the Māori community that knows that they've got black ancestry somewhere in the background to contact us on the Black House, because I'd love to have a yarn about what you know about your own ancestry and your connection to African heritage folks that may have come through the system of Britain's expansion of empire and their convict system that landed a lot of people in Australia, and those people may have also come down here. You know what I mean? I'd really love to know those stories. So they've got some characters that were around in the sealing days, mm-hmm. and one of those characters was a guy called Thomas Chaslin. And Thomas Chaslin, nickname Tommy or Tummy Titarini, right?
Yeah.
was actually his father was, we don't know if it was Caribbean or African, but his mother was Aboriginal. And he came down from Australia on a sealing ship.
Okay.
And he was known as one of the best sealers ever to come to New Zealand. So
I wonder what constituted the being a best sealer.
Well, apparently he was very tall, strong, and had amazing eyesight, so he could spot things. When sealing got into whaling, because sealers often went across, because sealing came first and then the whaling. The
whaling after this.
Right?
Yeah.
So when he could spot them without the telescope. He could see them damn. Before the guy with the telescope could see it. Yeah. And so he was so Tommy Chaslin is the son of Thomas Chaslin Sr. And Thomas, I've got one, I've seen a couple of ones, but they say that Thomas Chaslin Sr. was a convict of African descent. Mm. But I've also seen something where they weren't, they're not sure. So I want to find the exact record, you know. That I think that would be interesting because his son, his mother was Aboriginal and... Yeah, he came down here and became a really well-known sealer down, right down the bottom. He was right down the bottom of the South Island, like that area between the bottom of the South Island and Stewart Island. Could you imagine?
Yeah.
Freezing.
I'm not so well acquainted with the South Island. And then when it comes to such things, I'm so interested in... When you go back to, okay, now I'm mixing a lot of things here. When you go back to your transatlantic slave trade.
Right.
You had a lot of casualties because obviously black people were not accustomed to, you know, survival within, like, when you, just that route.
That
trip. It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's cold.
Yeah.
We are known to be more towards the warmer weather.
Yeah.
When it came to sealing and stuff like that, do you not think that them erasing the names of these people like Thomas Chaslin and stuff was more a thing to say, it's a bit of embarrassment that a man who is not supposed to take well to this kind of climate is actually outdoing us within this sphere of things?
We need... Listen, I worked in mining, and one thing I knew was that I knew how to drive trucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many men got pissed off that they knew that I could drive trucks?
It's an ego thing.
Yeah, it's an ego thing. I think it would happen.
I mean, just like how the story of Shaka Zulu is told.
Yeah.
As him being this tall black man who, you know, conquered the British.
Mm.
But actually he was a short guy. Was he? Yes.
I like the other version.
Short and stubby. Short and stubby just like
really?
Me.
Really?
Yeah, he wasn't
tall and elegant starred in that in the Shaka Zulu.
No.
Oh,
just,
damn.
He was just like me.
You know?
He was like me.
Yeah.
Basically.
And apparently this Tommy Chaslin was a bit of an adventurer. He was a bit of a, you know, like he was, loved his drink.
Yeah.
Fight. You know, like he was tall, big guy. I mean, I think that he would be quite an imposing figure.
Mm-hmm.
In that climate, in that element there, you know, and especially with, you know, because if you pull the lens back a bit and... You know, at this time, you've got to understand that New Zealand newspapers and reporters and that are talking about what's going on around the globe.
Yeah.
So everybody's aware of this perspective about black bodies and being used as chattel or used as slaves or whatever. They've got a perspective,
mm-hmm.
right? You can't really avoid it. You know, Australia, they were reporting everything that was going on in America and that was going on for Britain. They were reporting all of this stuff, you know. So it wasn't like people weren't aware. So I'd imagine that you would have some point of views about people of colour. Sometimes they actually, the term people of colour, I've learned, comes from slavery.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know that at all.
And why would you
think that? Person of colour. Because sometimes, and Santilla goes into this in the book, sometimes they didn't record like an ethnicity. They would either say black or use the N-word or person of color. That was the way colonial magistrates or whoever those people that do all the writing. And then some of these people that were running these ships, moving people around, they were merchant seamen, you know, they weren't like government, but they had contracts with government.
I feel like a little kid by the fire now.
Yeah.
Let's take a musical break because I think my mind is blowing up.
I know, my mind was blown up the whole time. I've had a blown up mind for a whole week.
This is Nduduzo Makatini with Beneath the Earth featuring Msaki, one of the most prolific writers when it comes to songwriting.
Right.
Yeah, I think we won't get through the whole song.
Is it one of those 10-minute ones, is it?
You know me, I always go.
Like, I always think, you know, when the when African musicians do that, and you know that, you know, Congolese musicians, yeah, they're very famous for having 8-minute, 12-minute songs.
Oh, yeah.
The dude's just drinking so much that they just have to keep going, like...
I think when it comes to this generation in music, we're seeing a lot of what's supporting the fact that we cannot concentrate for so long.
No.
That's why songs are like 1 minute, 30 seconds, we get bored, we move on.
Yeah.
It's the TikTok generation.
Yeah.
But when you're brewing something, it takes time. You go through the whole process of brewing it.
Mm.
So I believe when it comes to music, you have to take your time. That's why I don't believe in radio edits.
Mm.
Yeah, radio edits for person who's on radio. Yeah, I know.
It's like when we used to buy albums and you had a whole experience listening to that album.
Experience.
Yeah. One of my favorite ones, 89, De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising. That was the album of that summer for me.
Yeah, well, and we can't even get to albums these days which we don't skip.
Mm.
So you listen to one song, skip to the next. But
yeah,
we hope those days will come back.
Yeah.
But anyway, Nduduzo Makatini with Beneath the Earth.
Exiled from beneath. We speak in ancient tongues, singing songs of love.
Beneath the earth. There's something about this song, you know, that when I listen to it, it encapsulates a movement, a journey back in time into the present. And when you talk about beneath the earth, you're talking about your ancestors who've gone to be, they are buried beneath the earth and the riches that lie beneath the earth.
Yeah.
And this song, with its richness of the timing,